Good to see everyone. My family didn't come with me, but they send their love. My oldest isn't feeling well. She's having some stomach issues, so they decided to stay at home. But they said to say hi. This morning, every once in a while, I like to step back and just evaluate a particular piece of something that we do, that I do, that a local group does. And just, I tend to think about it as clean slate. What if I just came to this with a fresh perspective and didn't bring any of the baggage? What things would I conclude? And one thing that I noticed when I came in here is there's no piano here. And there's a book called Where Is the Piano, which I stole the name from, by Dan Chambers. And I took some of the content that he has in there. I used a book that I have, Church History for Busy People, and then a handbook of denominations, which you'll see here in a minute, as some text for this as I was thinking through some of this. But this is a topic that in my life that I have struggled with, and so I just want to walk through maybe a little bit of a different approach to looking at this than maybe in the past. And so I want to start off here really quick and think about what is their goal of worship. And Hebrews 12 and 28 says, "Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe, for our God is consuming fire." In Hebrews, it talks about an acceptable offering and acceptable service with reverence and awe. And so when we think about worshiping God, we're praising Him. We're wanting to know what pleases God. And so we ask the question, how do we know that? How do we know what pleases God? And simply, He has to tell us. That's the only way. I'll use an example. I despise mayonnaise. If you're eating it, I don't want to sit next to you because I don't want to smell it. I don't like mayonnaise at all. And I make that known to my children. But if they came to me and I was visiting them or they were visiting me and they were constantly bringing me mayonnaise, I would not view that as acceptable and pleasing to me because I have communicated to them what is pleasing to me, and it is not mayonnaise. And so we simply think about this idea in our life all the time. We don't necessarily put words with it, but we understand what people like and what people don't like. And if we're wanting to please them, we do the things that they have told us that they like. And so the only way for us to know what God wants is for Him to tell us, and we have the scriptures for that. But I want to back up. I want to back up and look at God holistically and just look at what role have instruments played with God's people. And so I want to look first at instruments before Jesus. I labeled it as in the Old Covenant, but you'll see here in a minute maybe a little further reaching in just the Old Law. And so I literally just went and I attempted, and this is a case where you can probably get pretty tight. And so if you find that I missed some scriptures, I'd love to talk through them. But I attempted to do an exhaustive study, as much as capture what the scriptures are saying about instruments and look at every single situation. But the first mention, and so if you look at the timeline up here, this is the time before Jesus. The very first mention of instruments is with Jubal, and it says that he played the lyre and the pipes, and he was the father of all who played the lyre and the pipes. Now, an interesting thing in Genesis is you get this pitting of Cain's children against Seth's children, and so this lineage ends with Lamech, which is not talked about positively, and we get Enoch on Seth's side, but when you compare these two, the Cain's lineage is not talked about favorably. And here we have a situation where this happens to be in Cain's. There's not, Genesis doesn't say this is good or bad. It just, the people in Cain's lineage are not talked about favorably. And so this is before the flood. So then the next mention is later with Miriam. Miriam in Exodus 15, after they crossed the Red Sea, Miriam, a prophetess, Aaron's sister, took a tambourine in her hand and went out and sang and danced. That's it. Before Moses. Those are the only two types of instruments that are mentioned. And so not a lot of content, and it not a lot of positioning for with worshiping God. If we look at Numbers 10, we jump to some additional context with when we enter with Moses. Numbers 10, starting in verse 1. Then the Lord spoke further to Moses, saying, make yourself two trumpets of silver, of hammered work. You shall make them, and you shall use them for summoning the congregation and have the camp set out. When both are blown, all the congregation shall gather together, and you shall at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Yet if you only blow one, the leader, the head of the division of Israel, shall assemble before you. But when you blow an alarm, the camp that pitched on the east side shall set out. When you blow an alarm the second time, the camp are pitched on the south side shall set out, an alarm to be blown out. When convening the assembly, however, you shall blow without sounding an alarm. The priestly sons of Aaron, moreover, shall blow the trumpets, and thus shall be for you a perpetual state throughout your generations. And so the first time we get instruments connected with worship of God, when you're convening people, when you're calling people together, it is two silver trumpets and only by the sons of Aaron. And then we get one other interesting tidbit in Leviticus 25. I pulled this in, but it is a ram's horn. 25 in verse 9 says, you shall then sound a ram's horn abroad on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. You shall sound a horn throughout your land. So, for 500 years, you have two silver trumpets and a ram's horn, and they're all done with priestly people in connection with the tabernacle. That's probably not how we think about the Old Testament, the Old Covenant. So that's what Moses would have implemented, and the Israelites would have used that for 500 years. But that's probably not why we think about it. We think about harps and lyres. And so that's what happens next. If you look at 1 Chronicles 13, 1 Chronicles 13 is the one of the places where we get insight into that. 1 Chronicles 13, this is with David. In verse 8, it says, David, so this is them with the ark, transporting the ark. 13 verse 8 says, David and all Israel were celebrating before God with all their might, even with songs and with lyres and harps and tambourines and cymbals and with trumpets. And when you're studying this, that seems out of place. There's no scripture in the old law that tells anyone to use those instruments. And then you continue, you see this, these type of instruments being used, and they feel like they have been added to worship. But then in 2 Chronicles 29, we get a little bit of tidbit that we didn't get earlier. 2 Chronicles 29. In 25. So this is Hezekiah restoring the temple. He then stationed the Levites in the house of the Lord with cymbals, with harps and lyres, according to the command of David and of Gad, the king's seer, and of Nathan the prophet, for the command was from the Lord through his prophets. And so later, we learn that through God's prophets, God commanded them to use these additional instruments. But again, only the Levites were appointed to use them. No one else. And so we see the Levites using these instruments to worship in a number of places. Obviously here with Hezekiah in the temple, but also with the ark and in connection with the temple. And so we have this additional period for another 1,000 years where we have these instruments being used in connection with the temple, but only by the Levites. And so three kind of periods before Jesus of instrument usage. Very little, almost none before Moses. Then 500 years of only silver trumpets and a horn. And then 1,000 years of additional instruments, but all the instruments that are being used post-Moses are with Levites, only with Levites. And in the blue up here, it's with the tabernacle, and in the green, it's in connection to the temple. So that lays the foundation of before Jesus. What about after Jesus? Now, these are going to be familiar verses, but I want to spend the time and just look at these really quickly, and I just want to read them. So again, I'm trying to pull out all of the places where they're talked about instruments or singing or praising of God. And so in the New Covenant, after singing a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. There's a couple places where that's pulled out. But about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns of praise to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. Therefore, I will give praise to you among the Gentiles, and I will sing your name. I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with the mind also. Be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, with all wisdom, teaching, admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts. I will proclaim your name to my brethren in the midst of the congregation. I will sing your praise. Is anyone cheerful? He is to sing praises. There you go. You just got everything in the New Testament about singing. The Old Testament talks about singing in connection to temple or tabernacle worship with instruments. Here in the New Testament is everything talked about with singing, praising with your voice. And so, instruments in the New Covenant, they're not mentioned. Why? Why are they not mentioned? If under the Old Covenant, the only people that used instruments were Levites in connection to the tabernacle and temple, Levites are not around. There will be no temple right after Jesus. No one would have thought about them as being needed. Individuals that were not Levites and not in the temple would not have used instruments. So no Levites, no temple, no instruments. And you start asking some questions, like, okay, I'm tracking a little bit with you, Ben, but like, what about the historical use of instruments? Like, there's a lot. Like, everywhere we go around, if you go to a church building, they're probably using instrumental music to worship God. And so I wanted to go back in time. Now, so now we're Jesus forward. We're in AD. Instruments from the beginning, early on, were not used. So a little context here, around 200 AD, we get the first mention of the word Catholic and the word Pope. But I have them down in the red, meaning no instruments, because it wasn't until about 600 AD that the Catholic Church claimed that they were the first people to reintroduce instruments into worship. They claim that. I don't know that I would call it bragging, but they say that we are the first people to do that, and that was around 600 AD. And so, therefore, if they're claiming that they're the first to do that, they weren't using them before, and now they've brought them back in. And if you think about Catholicism, it has a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels to the Old Covenant and bringing some of those things in. And just for some frame of reference, the Bible parts started to be assembling together into a cohesive book around 300 AD. And it's probably worth noting that Muhammad, of the Muslim faith, lived around 600 AD also. And so these things were all transpiring around this early period. An interesting thing, you may have heard of a group called the Greek Orthodox. They are a branch of the Catholic Church. They branched off about 1,000. I don't know it was because of instruments, but the Greek Orthodox Church today does not use instruments. But if you attended a service, it would feel very Catholic, just minus the instruments. Martin Luther, also a split off of the Catholic Church, he was in favor and used instrumental music, but that's it. So in the green, that's all you're going to get until, for a long time, over 1,500 years, only Catholic, only Lutheran. And an interesting thing, so 1500 is the Presbyterian started by John Calvin. So I'm talking in generalities here, but John Calvin wrote a number of things adamantly opposed to instruments in worship. Methodist John Wesley also adamantly opposed to instrumental music. And Charles Spurgeon, who was a Baptist, also speaks about instrumental music as not having a place in the worship of God. And so, for the bulk of history, most people viewed instrumental music as not acceptable nor authorized to do. The only people were Catholics and Lutherans. And that did not change for hundreds of years. That change is a relatively recent change. Within the last few hundred years, we have seen a shift in that. But if you went back 250 years ago, that would have been worshiping God without instruments would have been commonplace. There's a quote that I really like. When I was studying this, I went and read some text from days gone by, and there is, so just like Charles Spurgeon or Wesley, like these in the history of Christianity, these would be pillars in like writing. Some of them have written fantastic material on this topic, but there's a gentleman, and I'll give you his name here in just a minute, but he has this quote. He says, "It is false to assume that God has approved at certain places, at certain times, in certain circumstances. He is approved at all places, at all times, in all circumstances. That's by John Gerardo, who has, it's not a book, he wrote, it's about 80, maybe 90 pages of content solely dedicated to this topic. He wrote it in the early 1800s, and it is just an absolutely fantastic study of this topic. And I think that is fair for us to think about on this topic. I want to look at this holistically. Let me pull everything in together. So we have early worship, where we almost saw no discussion of instruments. We saw tabernacle worship, which was the two trumpets and the horn. We saw temple worship, which is what David, authorized by God, brought additional instruments in. The green is still only the Levites. And then now we have new covenant worship, but there's no mention of instruments. One thing that when you study this topic always comes up, especially with the new covenant worship, well, Revelations. Revelations talks about instruments, and that's part of the New Testament. So I want to take a minute and look there. So I want to look at Revelations. I want to look at what are some old covenant practices or elements that are called out in Revelations. And so obviously worship is called out, singing is called out. It also talks about the tabernacle, the temple, altars, incense, prayer, throne, Ark of the Covenant, harps. All of these things are talked about in Revelations. And you can see, like, some of them we would put into, yep, oh yeah, I resonate with that, or no, those seem like old covenant things. And so I want to look at a couple of passages in Revelations, and I want to walk through chapter and verse. I want to look at the actual text. I want to look at who is worshiping and where they are worshiping. And I'm intentionally excluding Revelations 4 because we're going to get to it here in a minute. But Revelations 8 says this: when he had taken the book, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each one holding a harp and a golden bowl full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, and it goes on. And so who is worshiping? The four creatures and the 24 elders. Where are they worshiping? In the throne room in heaven. I'm going to work through kind of an ugly picture of this here in a minute, but Revelations 14 says, and I heard a voice from heaven, like the sound of many waters and like the sound of loud thunder. And the voice which I heard was like the sound of a harpist playing on their harps. And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And in this, it's the 144,000 who have not been defiled by women, that are the first fruits, that are blameless. And where are they doing it? It's before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And then the last one I want to look at is Revelations 15. And I saw something like a sea of glass mixed with fire. And those who have been victorious over the beast and his image and the number of his name standing on the sea of glass, holding harps of God. And they sang a new song of Moses, the bondservant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, and it goes on. Here, who's worshiping? The victorious over the beast. And where are they worshiping? It says, on the sea of glass. It calls it mixed with fire. So obviously we know with Revelations, lots of imagery. And so I'm going to try to take things that probably shouldn't be put on paper because it's imagery, but I'm going to try to put it on paper for you up here so that we can frame up where this is happening. So if you want to, this is where I'm going to go with Revelations 4. I'm going to walk right down through Revelations 4, and we're going to paint this scene. And I think that's going to help give us some context to what we just saw. Excuse me. So Revelation 4, verse 2, says there's a throne. So remember the other verses talked about a throne, and that there is one sitting on that throne. And in Revelation 4, 4, it says 24 thrones with 24 elders with crowns. So I'm going to put the 24 elders on 24 thrones with their 24 crowns around this one that's sitting on a throne. Then verse 5 says that there are seven lamps of fire. We just read about the sea of glass, the green sea of glass, and it was like fire. And so I don't know what a green sea of glass looks like in Keynote, but I just use water and green here to sea of glass. Then there are four living creatures, a lion, a calf, a man, and an eagle around this throne. And then if you jump down to chapter 5 and verse 6, it says, between the throne and the elders is a lamb. And then he talks about that he took out a book and it's on his right hand. And so this is the scene that's being painted. And we see that when we read the other verses, you saw the 24 elders, we saw the thrones, we saw the sea of glass that was like fire also. And so you can see the lamps of fire, sea of glass. And then these four creatures and 24 elders, they have harps, bowls, and they're singing. There's an altar in chapter 6, verse 9. And in 11, 19, there's an Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is there. And so this is a messy picture, but this is Ben's mind of like, hey, this is what's being painted, and there are chapters painting this picture and setting this scene. And so the question I have then is, where in the world is all of this happening? There's a throne, there's a lampstand, there's instruments, altars, lamb, incense, singing, ark, water. Where's all this happening? It says it's happening in heaven, in a throne room. But where is that throne room? Where does Revelation say that throne room is? In Revelation 7:15, it says, for this reason, they are before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple. And he sits on the throne, will spread his tabernacle over them. Where is this scene set? Where is this whole situation happening? It's happening in the temple. That looks like a castle, but that's my best temple that I have there. And so we have a scene set that sure sounds like the old covenant. And so in 21... Revelations 21, we see this material shift in Revelations. Really starts in 20, but in 21 it says, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. What sea is he talking about? That green sea that's in the temple. That's no longer. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem. In Revelations 21, 22, it says, I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. And so, we start off with this scene of a throne room and instruments in a temple. And Revelations 20, and at the end, says, temple's gone away. The green sea has gone away. And so we see Revelations. I want to be careful that I'm not saying Revelations mirrors these, but we see in Revelations 1 through 20 talking more like the old covenant. Then in 21 and 22, we see a shift. We say that old way has gone away. I don't see the temple anymore. I see a new Jerusalem. And so when the instruments are talked about in Revelations, I think they're talked about in the setting of a temple. And Revelation is saying, that's gone away. You recognize this. This is familiar to you. He's writing to people that would have known, yep, I remember that. I remember instruments in the temple. That's gone away. A new Jerusalem has come. And that's where Revelation 21 and 22. And so, in my mind, the instruments discussed in Revelations have nothing to do with the new covenant. He's showing what it looks like, what it looked like in familiarity from the old covenant. So I skipped over Psalms. What about Psalms? What are the old covenant practices in Psalms? So Psalms has a lot about singing, about sacrificing bulls, singing, tabernacle, temple, burnt offerings, censers, altars, instruments, festivals, sacrifices, thanks offerings. Are these things that we sing about? We won't find a lot of these things in our songs. Why don't we sing about them? Because we don't do these anymore. And so, when you think about our time frame here, think about what else could we use to frame up how we think about instruments. And I want to look at synagogues. So there is and I'll walk through a little bit of history here. So remember we talked about David, by the command of God, bringing instruments in. When the first temple was destroyed, we call it the Babylonian captivity, the Israelites went into captivity, and we see synagogues cropping up because there's no temple, but Israelite people want to worship God. We see a second temple being built. And then later after Jesus, that temple is destroyed. But an interesting thing happens when you look at history and what people are writing down. There's a text called Mishnah. There was a fear. So during this time, this passing of tradition, these oral traditions were passed down. And when the way we have insight into what they were doing, like what did they do when they didn't have a temple? How did they worship God? How did they manage not having a place for the Levites to serve in the way that had been prescribed? And so after the destruction of the second temple, there was fear from the Israelites that they would lose this tradition. And so the oral law that they were using was written down. And it's one of the texts is called the Mishnah. Another one was the Talmud, was written down in close time frame together. And so we have insights into what not Christians and not biblical text, but what the Jewish people post-Jesus was thinking about before Jesus, and how they were functioning without the temple. And so now we have a pattern of what did the Israelites believe about worshiping God without a temple? And that would give us insight into how Christians would have approached worship, or how they would have thought about worship absent of a temple. And so do synagogues use instruments today? If you visit a synagogue, generally speaking, the answer is no. Israelite people do not, Jewish people do not use instruments in their worship of God. In fact, the Talmud says no. The verbiage is strange a little bit, because it says no smacking, which I think is, I don't know what smacking, clapping your leg, because it says no dancing nor clapping either. If you do these things, that leads people to use instruments, and that's not okay. And so at least oral tradition passing down, there was the view that instruments in worship was not okay, because which would make sense, because the Levites wouldn't have been able to fulfill their duty without the temple, and the instruments were only used in connection with the tabernacle or the temple. So then a question comes up, well, the Psalms talk about like instruments and using instruments and to the choir director. So aren't the Psalms used in the synagogues? They absolutely are. It probably sounds more like a chant to us. A number of the Psalms specifically are used regularly. But how are they used without a temple and without Levites? They are used without instruments. And so the pattern that was used without the standard that God set forth to use instruments was to not use them at all. And so when you come to Christians, when they are learning about Jesus and following Jesus post him, they, in my mind, never would have considered using instruments because the instruments were used in connection with the temple and by the Levites. But let's look at temple worship here, and so in connection to this. So in temple worship, there was singing, there were bowls, there were instruments, there was giving, prayer, sacrifice, priests, teaching, reading, incense, lampstands. The ark would have been there. If you separate some of this out and pull forward what we see in the synagogues, we see this. We see them using the things that have no specific connection to temple worship because they don't have the temple any longer. The Hebrews 9 talks about the temple being a shadow. These are a shadow of things to come. The New Testament never makes the temple the pattern for worship. We see Mosaic patterns becoming new covenant realities. We see the early church history, the Catholic Church bringing the temple type worship back into there. The early church starts bringing shadows and types of things back into church worship when they need to stay as shadows. So if I were to conclude, think about the three periods of time and connect that, and how were instruments used by God's people. And so what statements might you be able to say? In connection to tabernacle worship, Moses commanded the priest to use two silver trumpets. In connection to temple worship, David commanded the Levites to use certain additional instruments. In connection to new covenant worship, there's no mention of instruments. And I think it makes sense why that pattern would have followed without the temple and without the Levites. And I think Revelations continues to support that idea.